I could go to that Sunday school class. I think they got food there. But, they do. Maybe I can help next week. Good morning. So glad to be here. What a blessing to have those songs of worship. I stand in awe of what he's done. Right, that last song. The one who gave his life for me. I count it a privilege to open God's word with you. There's this godly gray hair that gave me a challenge. And he said, by the way, there's one thing that Jesus carries with him into heaven. If you want to figure that out, we'll talk, buy me coffee later on. But then he said, there's probably, I'm not sure, and this is kind of conjecture, but there's probably one thing that we bring into heaven with us. Now, we don't see a hearse with a U-Haul behind it, so it's nothing we carry from body, from things we can buy. But he said, he challenged me, he said, the one thing we can carry into heaven with us is the knowledge of God. That's an interesting perspective. I wonder about if, well, I remember all those songs that we've been singing. Well, I know the 72 ways we sing Amazing Grace. I don't know, maybe we will. Maybe God will have a new way for us to sing Amazing Grace together. But why I say that's important is I count it a privilege to, and I'm sure the other guys that stand up here do too, just because we have to pour into the Word and to get to know God better through it. So I hope it blesses you like it has encouraged me. I invite you to click or to turn to John chapter 18. If you have those little bulletins, they can help you today especially. There's a little handout there. And John Amayo shared a few weeks ago that Judas betrayed Jesus with a kiss. And that ushered in this crazy few hours of a whirlwind of trials for Jesus. Now, John was in this unique position as the apostle who had a relationship with people that he was able to kind of see a two-ring circus. One point last week, Bill described how this challenge that Peter had and his moral failings and his just rejecting Christ and publicly saying that. And on the other hand, he saw firsthand these trials that Jesus was going through. All through his ministry, John saw Jesus knocking it out of the park. Remember, the last week of his ministry, man, he would be in the temple teaching and they would try to trick him out and he'd blow them away. But here he is in a different situation in the middle of the night, and it looks like Jesus is losing. I imagine how hard it was for John to go through that, to have truth on trial. So while you're turning there, I need to confess to you, many of you know me, know this already about me, but I am a fanatic about one thing, football. So are you ready for some football? This is a weekend to start, and I wanted to start by sharing one of my favorite moments in my favorite team. I bleed aqua and orange. Those of you who have ever had the privilege of being with me during a game when Miami may be losing, it happens once or twice. It's ugly. It's ugly in the Miles home when they lose. But this is one of my favorite moments. In fact, it's the top one trick play of all times. And that's not the right thing I just opened up. But this is. So I'm just going to turn off Slack because that's not going to be useful to be there. Too many things going on. That's okay. Here we go. Dan Marino. Can you hear me now?
Inside the 10. Here's a first down. Ingram again. Stopped by Glenn.
Marino's trying to get everybody on the line of scrimmage. Now he still has one timeout. They'll save that for the field goal.
We are seeing another spectacular effort by Marino, who fires. Touchdown!
You know what the Jets were thinking? He's going to take the ball and throw it into the ground. They all stopped. I want you to watch these guys here first. Then Ingram is going to see how far away he is. He's going to go to the end zone for the touchdown. But watch Marino. He gets him up in a hurry. But watch the defensive linemen. Watch what they do. Nothing. They're all standing around. There's only one guy rushing. Marino goes up and throws the ball. Ingram is there for the touchdown. He's just letting these guys know, you know, he's putting his hand out. But that's the communication he has with Ingram. And the guys are standing around. Fraze is the only guy that rushes. And there's Glenn. He's really not paying much attention. He thinks he's going to drop the ball down. Fraze, again, was the only guy there. Marino.
Do we all see it? I can show it a couple more times if you want to see that. But again, it's my favorite play, and it is one of those trick plays that you can only do once in your life, right? Because now they know he would do that. Of course, he retired now, but that's okay. Down by three, has that trick play. It's awesome. These days, though, you see these days in football, there's trickery in almost every game. If an offense gets away with maybe a pass that isn't quite caught, that traps with the ground, or maybe a fumble that happens that the refs don't see, you see the guys going like this, the offense going like this. They want to get that play off before the refs or the coaches see it, or the other coach sees it, because they want to watch out for that red flag, that challenge flag. They have a couple challenge flags, and they can throw that off. Because if you hike that ball, then the play counts, even though it wasn't real. And I thought about that in terms of what goes on this week. This past week has been a crazy week if you followed along, and I will not get political, but if we think about that political drama that played out with the confirmation hearings, sometimes it appears as though there is more of a political agenda or even a personal agenda over the purpose of that hearing. Sometimes people have an agenda, or they try to get the perception as opposed to the truth. And we like to do that. We like to do it all the time. We like to trick. And as you think about the passage we're going to read, you get the perspective that these leaders, the religious leaders of Jesus' day, are trying to trick him. They're trying to get him and get rid of him, because he is in their way. Remember, we read together in John 11, Jesus had just raised Lazarus from the dead. He raised him from the dead, and the leaders are saying, what are we going to do with this man? And then we read, one of them, Caiaphas, who was chief high priest that year, said to them, you know nothing at all. True statement. Nor do you take into account that it is expedient for you that one man die for the people, and that the whole nation not perish. And here's the kicker. The religious leaders of Jesus' day, the people who had the closest relationship with God, who could share with others, and just walk behind me and get the essence of God from me, here's what they said. From that day on, they planned together to kill Jesus. That was their plan. And now we're going to see how they're going to try to enact it. And very quick work. According to plan, right? Let's also look again to Jesus' plan. Remember John 13. That was when this whole last day of his life began. That he was going to sit down with his disciples for the Passover. And he says, before the feast of the Passover, Jesus, knowing that his hour had come, that he would depart out of this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. That's so critical that Jesus loved us to the end, because the next few hours he's going through, if I had a choice. We read even further in John chapter 18, the chapter we're looking at, as Judas is coming with the people to arrest him, Jesus, knowing all the things that were coming upon him, went forth and said to them, whom do you seek? Jesus was ready. So whose plans are we seeing established here? Let's go and see. Let's read together John 18. I'm going to start at 12 to 14 for just a good reason. We'll see. The Roman cohort and the commander of the officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him. We're going to see Jesus bound for the entire time, this last 14 hours of his life. And led him to Annas first, for he was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was high priest that year. Now, Caiaphas was one who had advised the Jews that it was expedient for one man to die on behalf of the people. We just read about that. Simon Peter was following Jesus, and so was another disciple. But then I read, because we believe that that disciple was the guy that wrote this book, John. that he had special access and he was able to get a front row seat to both of these touring circuses going on at once. His friend and partner in ministry just going through this failure, this rough time. And then Jesus going through these trials that no one should have to go through. Now, the disciple was known to the high priest and entered with Jesus in the court of the high priest. Let's read on. The high priest then questioned Jesus about his disciples and about his teaching. Jesus answered him, I have spoken openly to the world. I always taught in the synagogues and in the temple where all the Jews come together. And I spoke nothing in secret. Why do you question me? Question those who've heard what I spoke to them. They know what I said. When he had said this, one of the officers staying nearby struck Jesus, saying, is that the way you answer the high priest? Remember, this is Annas. Jesus answered him, if I have spoken wrongly, testify of the wrong. But if rightly, why do you strike me? So Annas sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. We pick up in verse 28. Then they led Jesus from Caiaphas in the praetorium. A few things happened in this period. And it was early, and they themselves did not enter in the praetorium so that they would not be defiled, but might eat the Passover. Therefore, Pilate went out to them and said, what accusation do you bring against this man? They answered and said to him, if this man was not an evildoer, we would not have delivered him to you. Trust us. So Pilate said to them, take him yourselves and judge him according to your law. The Jews said to him, we are not permitted to put anyone to death. To fulfill the word of Jesus, which he spoke, signifying but what kind of death he was about to die. Jesus knew that this was coming. Therefore, Pilate entered into the praetorium and summoned Jesus and said to him, are you the king of the Jews? Jesus answered, are you saying this on your own initiative? Or did others tell you about me? Pilate answered, I'm not a Jew, am I? Your own nation and the chief priests delivered you to me. What have you done? He doesn't know yet. Jesus answered, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then my servants would be fighting so that I would not be handed over to the Jews. But as it is, my kingdom is not of this realm. Pilate said to him, so you are a king. Jesus answered, you say correctly that I am a king. For this I have been born. For this I have come into the world to testify to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice. Pilate said to him, what is truth? And when he had said this, he went out again to the Jews and said to them, I find no fault in him. But you have a custom that I release someone for you at the Passover. Do what you wish then, that I release for you the king of the Jews. Do you wish I release him? They cried out again, saying, not this man, but Barabbas. Now Barabbas was a robber. So, there we saw the session we're going to work through. And if you've ever seen a word cloud, I shared this before. I like to do this because it makes sure I'm focusing on the right things that were said in the passage. So every time a word's mentioned, the word gets bigger. And so we see Jesus saying things, answering things to the Pilate, the high priest, and the Jews. This was Jesus on trial. This was truth on trial. Because Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. So, think about if you were able to know about your last day on earth, how you'd plan that out. Maybe you'd go out for your favorite breakfast. Maybe you'd go out for your favorite meals. Maybe you'd make sure that you tell your loved ones you care about them. Think about what Jesus' last day on earth was like. Here we go. And the Jewish calendar is, the Jewish time period is between 6 p.m. one day to 6 p.m. the next day. That's how we break out a day. Let's look at his last day. Start with the Last Supper. Jesus interrupts the Passover and says, this is me. I'm the Passover lamb. And he presents a new way for them. They have, he washes the disciples' feet, and then Judas leaves to go to betray him. The second watch, between 9 and 12 in the morning, they leave the upper room, and we get that great passage we've been reading together, John 15 to 17, where Jesus is sharing with them some really great perspective. Going to prepare a place, the vine, prayer in the garden for us, the high priestly prayer. And then, in third watch of the night, sometime between 12 and 3, Judas comes and kisses him. And that signifies he's the man. Jesus is arrested, and the disciples scatter. They run. And then we begin six trials that happen in the next few hours. The first trial is at the home of Annas, who happens to not be the high priest, but the father-in-law of the high priest, followed by Caiaphas, where the real meat of the condemnation happens. Then we have early morning, because you can't have these meetings at night. They have official meeting in the morning, a formal hearing with the Sanhedrin, followed by time they present him to Pilate, again bound. Fifth trial, Pilate finds out, sends him to Herod. Herod thinks it's a joke and sends him back. Finally, we have the sixth trial where he's declared not guilty, but condemned to death. Then, noon, we have the final judgment. Jesus is crucified on the cross, those 3 hours. Penalty is paid. And then, before 6 p.m., before Passover can begin, before Friday night, big Sabbath thing can begin, they take him down from the cross, and they bury him before the Sabbath. That's not the way I would live on my last day on earth, but that's what he went through for us. Think about that. It's amazing. So let's go through the trials in more detail, and hopefully we'll draw some things out. First of all, we see the trials. There were six of them. Three were religious trials before the Jewish leaders, the chief priests, the Pharisees, the people on the council. And the last three were civil trials. So as we look at these six trials in more detail, we see a really important fact. In the Jewish legal system, it was the court's duty to preserve life and not destroy it. Innocent until proven guilty, way back then. The Sanhedrin held the strict laws to ensure fairness and mercy, and when properly administered, it worked out and we have good results. But not in this trial. We're going to see the Sanhedrin participated in many dishonest and illegal activities to their code, to advance their plan. They planned together to have him killed, as we shall see. First trial. First trial, I'm mystified by, to be honest. The first trial was only recorded in John. It was a pre-trial. I think John had that unique perspective because he was there in the court. We believe probably Annas and Caiaphas weren't that far apart from each other, but he was there. It was a pre-trial where Jesus was taken directly by the guards. Remember, he was bound in the garden. He was taken not to a cell, not to the high priest's house, but to the father-in-law of the high priest's house, Annas. And there he was questioned by Annas. Let's read the dialogue. Annas questioned Jesus about his disciples and his teaching. Jesus said, "I've spoken openly to the world. I always taught in synagogues and in temple. I've said nothing in secret. Why do you question me? Question those who've heard what I spoke to them. They know what I said. When you are brought to trial, you have to have witnesses speak about you." But Jesus said, "Bring the people who said anything wrong about me." And in the ultimate perspective of disrespect, when he had said this, one of the officers struck Jesus in the face and said, "Is this the way you answer the high priest?" Problem is, he wasn't the high priest. He had been the high priest. He was the father-in-law of the high priest. It was their own little group there. Jesus answered and said, "If I have spoken wrongly, testify of the wrong. But if rightly, why do you strike me?" Jesus is getting at the fact that this is an illegal gathering. So we see that Annas couldn't do anything. But he sent him to Caiaphas with no evidence. Now, why did he go to Annas? Some commentators say, well, maybe it was a delay tactic while they got everybody else to Caiaphas' house. Maybe he was trying to exert his authority Maybe he was trying to strong arm him like Danny Reagan would do in Blue Bloods, you know, in that interrogation room. We don't know exactly. We do know that according to the Talmud, which they were to follow, a trial was never to be held at night. And this clearly was. Second trial. And this is a meaty trial. All four Gospels talk about this. In fact, Matthew and Mark are almost exact word for word. And so we're going to go to their perspective. Anna sent Jesus bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. Now the chief priests and the whole council kept trying to obtain testimony against Jesus to put him to death, and they weren't finding any. Truth be told, we read in there that many were giving false testimony against him, but their testimony was not consistent. They couldn't find two guys with the same story. They couldn't verify that. Through all this, Jesus kept silent. Through all those people accusing him of wrong, he kept silent. Until the high priest said, "I adjure you by the living God that you tell us whether you are the Christ, the Son of God." And Jesus says, "I am." He says a lot more, but he says, "I am." The high priest then tore his robes and said, "He has blasphemed. What further need do we have of witnesses?" Except for the fact that that was the procedure they needed to follow. "What do you think?" They answered, "He deserves death." Then they spat in his face. Now, before I go to what happened there, I marvel at this because there's a bunch of rules that have been broken right here. The accused was allowed to have an attorney present, yet Jesus was never afforded any defense attorney. The accused couldn't be declared guilty without a reputable witness, but everyone who accused him was a false witness and could not be verified. And then, when I think about what happened next, Jesus. They are looking at Jesus in the face. The way, the truth, and the life. They're looking at truth and trying to bring lies to him. Perception versus reality. And what do? They look at truth in the face and they spit in his face. They beat him with their fists and others slapped him. Now, as I understand the time period here, it didn't happen quickly. This was probably over a long period of time, a couple of hours, that this was happening. They declared him a death sentence and said he's blasphemed. And then they abused him while they were waiting for daylight, which was the third trial. The third trial, they had to wait for daylight because, of course, you can't have a trial during the nighttime. So they rushed him to the official meeting place and they offered a death sentence. It was a formality to keep up appearances. Luke tells us, when morning came, they led him away to their council chamber, from Caiaphas' house to the council chamber. Early in the morning, the chief priests with the elders and scribes and the whole council immediately held a consultation, and binding Jesus, they led him away and delivered him to Pilate. This was, everybody here, what do you say? Guilty? Let's go. And they bound him and they sent him to Pilate. Now, members of Sanhedrin, when hearing testimony in a capital case where death is prescribed, weren't permitted to make a rush judgment, but were required to adjourn for 2 days to their homes before rendering the decision. After 2 days, they were to offer the verdict from the youngest to the oldest, so the youngest wasn't swayed by the oldest opinion. This didn't happen here. It was a matter of hours. So we move from those three trials that he had before the religious folks, you know, the people who know God and trying to serve him. We move very quickly to the civil trials, starting with Pilate. Now, I'm struggling a little bit as I go through these because I want to give you the whole story, but I don't want to steal Steve's thunder. We got a great speaker for the next 2 weeks about relationships, and Steve's going to follow up in John 19 about more of this trial. But I want to give enough perspective so you see it, especially from the verses that I've been given in John 18. So let's read. Pilate entered the praetorium. They led Jesus from Caiaphas to the praetorium, and it was early. They did not enter the praetorium themselves, so they would not be defiled. but might eat the Passover. Pilate said, what accusation do you bring against this man? They answered, if this man were not an evildoer, we would not have delivered to him. In other words, trust us, he's a bad dude. We got to get rid of him, he's bad. Kind of need more than that. Pilate said, take him yourselves and judge him according to your law. The Jews said, well, we're not permitted to put anyone to death to fulfill Jesus' word. Notice the hypocrisy. They condemn Jesus to death, but they drop him off on Pilate's doorstep because they don't want to defile themselves. They've got a big Passover feast to celebrate later in the day. They don't want to mess with that, right? So here you go. He's your problem now. We declare he's guilty. You take care of it. They want to keep up appearances. And then notice the charge. What's the accusation? Trust us. He's bad. So Pilate goes into the praetorium where Jesus is being held, and he summons Jesus. Are you the king of the Jews? Jesus answered, are you saying this on your own initiative, or did others tell you about me? Jesus is getting to his heart. Pilate answered, I'm not a Jew, am I? Your own nation and chief priests delivered you to me. What have you done? He still doesn't know. What have you done? Jesus answered, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would be fighting so that I would not be handed over to the Jews. Pilate said, oh, so you are a king. Jesus answered, you say correctly that I'm a king. For this I've been born, for this I've come to the world to testify to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice. And Pilate says something we could talk about for hours. He says, what is truth? And a lot of people conjecture about his perspective when he's saying that. Is he really dealing with his own heart about this, or is he just kind of flipping, what's truth? These days, we have people who are saying, truth is not truth, it's my perception of the truth. And he's struggling there because he knows the Jewish people are trying to get Jesus executed. When he had said this, Pilate went out to the Jews and said to them, first trial, I find no guilt in him, not guilty. This is a civil trial. Declares him not guilty. We go on to the second trial. And in this trial, Pilate heard that Jesus was a Galilean, that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, so he sent him to Herod, who himself was in Jerusalem at the time. We read that Herod was very glad when he saw Jesus, for he wanted to see him for a long time by reputation. He's hoping that maybe Jesus would perform a sign for him, maybe a sign on cue or something. And here we get Herod questioning Jesus. And Jesus remains silent. He doesn't say a word. At the same time, the chief priests and the people there are saying all kinds of accusations. He did this, he did that. Jesus is remaining silent. Well, Herod didn't put up with this. With his soldiers, after treating him with contempt and mocking him, they dressed him in a gorgeous robe. And we read that in other passages, they beat him in that robe. And they sent him back to Pilate. He was done with a fiasco. He was done with a freak show. There was nothing to see here. Now, in Luke 23:14, Pilate says this when he comes back. Jesus comes back to him. You brought me this man as one who incites the people to rebellion. And behold, having examined him before you, I find no guilt in this man regarding the charges which you make against him. No, nor has Herod. For he sent him back to us, and behold, nothing deserving death has been done by him. Here we have the third not guilty verdict. Herod and Pilate twice. So Pilate says, so what shall I do with Jesus, who is called Christ? By the way, I give you these things so you can study in the sheet. There you see the harmony of the Gospels. You can see each of them kind of going through it in their own ways. Pilate said here, what shall I do with Jesus, who is called Christ? And they all said, crucify him. And he said, why? What evil has he done? Supposed to be a charge to be guilty? And they kept on shouting all the more. It's not about truth, it's about perception. He's evil, get rid of him. Crucify him. When Pilate saw that he was accomplishing nothing, but rather that a riot was starting, he took water in a basin, and he washed his hands and said, I have nothing. I am innocent of this man's blood. See to it yourselves. He could do nothing else but say, this is your problem. He's not guilty in my eyes. But what does he do? All the people, and this is the most chilling thing I've read in this section, all the people said, his blood be on us and on our children. And in a real way, that is prophetic, because his blood can cover us from our sin, even as we in our own hearts are rejecting God. God, Jesus Christ, shed his blood for us on the cross. But they were saying, we'll take it, you know, he's bad, let's get rid of him. Pilate released Barabbas for them, but after having Jesus scourged, he handed him over to be crucified. I like how Luke says it. He says he delivered him to their will because he was losing this battle. It was now a riot scene, and he had to calm the people. The only way to do it was to give him the prisoner. And so he administered the death penalty. He sent him to be crucified after scourging him. In a few weeks, I'm sure that Steve will go into more details of those. But in the sixth trial, the Jewish courts accused Jesus of blasphemy. That's what they said in their trial, which is admissible only in a Jewish court. It means nothing in a Roman court. Knowing this reality, the Jews had to change the charge, alter the charge when they met with the Roman governor. This is an illegal act in itself. You don't try him on one thing and then bring him over for another thing. Before Rome, the Jews accused Jesus of insurrection and treason, which if proven guilty, would incur a sentence of death. But it wasn't. Three looks and it wasn't. So, and then one of the most, a man cannot be executed the same day that he was tried and sentenced. That's another law in the Jewish people. But the greatest travesty of justice was how cowardly Pilate was. Because Jesus was declared guilty, but never proven guilty. And Pilate found no fault, but still sends him to death. A cowardly act. But part of the plan. So we see the overview of the six trials. There were three Jewish trials, three civil trials. Part of a really bad day that Jesus was having. Just pouring out time after time again, being bound from one place to the other. Ultimately, to be given the death sentence and to go to the cross. So, in summary, I thought about what the writer of the Hebrews said in Hebrews 12:3. Consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself. Think about the hostility he had. He was wrongly accused. He was mocked. He was beaten. He was slapped in the face. He was spit upon. He was bound. He was not declared guilty, but he still charged. He went through all that and then ultimately dying on the cross. His blood poured out for you and I. That is the hostility of sinners against himself. And the writer says, so that you and I do not lose heart. So important. So we've seen these truths of these six trials he went through. And I wanted to find a practical way for me that would make sense. And it may not for you, but that's okay. I learned these things. And Jen, you're going to laugh. The first one is actually the second one. Purpose. If Jesus endured this hostility, what about the hostilities and trials that I face? Here's a cold reality. Jesus went through this last day of his life with the Father still being sovereign over all. He allowed his son to go through all of this pain, to go through all these, all this hostility. The Father in heaven filtered this pain and allowed his son to go through that. God did that for him. Guess what? God, in the same way, all the trials, all the circumstances, all the tribulations you and I go through, they're Father filtered. That means God is more concerned about his character and about his plan than my comfort. Now, I'm all about comfort and security and safety. I'm all for that. I build those models in my life as much as I can to protect myself. But God is not about that. He's about building his character in you and I. He's about his purposes for you and I. And sometimes it may be to walk the road as Jesus did. But from that purpose, knowing God's purpose, if you don't get anything else than this, we know God's purpose, it brings God's perspective. If Jesus endured these trials, as we've been sharing that he has, he went through all that to the cross for you and I. Can I truly look past myself? Can I truly look past the annoyances, the pain, and those pains are real, the physical, medical, relational, the strains we go through right now, the stresses of this life. But can we look, put that in perspective, the eternal perspective of what God did for you and I, how he loved us so much that he endured this hostility against himself for you and I. That brings perspective. God's purpose brings perspective in my life. And the third thing is preparation. Now, this is a hard pill to swallow. But when, not if, but when truth is on trial in my life, how will I respond? Bill, earlier in the first meeting, shared from Mark 8, where Peter was going through one of those situations where truth was on trial. We will go through situations. I have seen in my job, I've seen as I deal with people, that is mostly about perspective as opposed to truth. What are we going to do when God calls upon us to shine the light and let the whole world see? What is God going to do when he asks us to stand and give him glory? Hard challenges. Maybe this message is something you store away, and maybe something about what Jesus did for you, it's going to click for you. I pray that happens. I pray that happens for me. Maybe it's as early as tomorrow at work or at school. Who knows? Purpose, perspective, and preparation. Sorry for the P's. I feel like I'm Jim Mayer now, but that's what God has done for us. Let's pray. Gracious Father, we thank you so much for what Jesus did for us. We recognize you died on the cross, but as we even looked about your last day on earth, from presenting yourself as a Passover lamb to going through all those trials, all that mocking, all that hatred, all that scorn, you did for me. Father, I pray that it gives me an understanding of your purposes in our lives, in my life. I pray that it gives me perspective so that I can count every blessing. And Father, I pray that it gives me an opportunity to be prepared to give an answer to anyone that asks me about the hope that is within me. We thank you in Jesus' great name. Amen.